there. Welcome to What Our Parents Said Virtual Edition. We are going to go to Zoom now that we are back home. Finals is just about done. Welcome one and all. I am Jack Woods. With me as always is Landon Wood. And today we are joined by Landon's fraternal father, Thomas Kurt, a very good friend of mine. We work together on the newspaper. But Thomas, it is great to have you. How you guys doing?
Oh, I'm doing all good.
Right. Yeah.
Trying to get through the last few weeks, you know, the grind.
Oh, yeah. How about you, Thomas? What's going on with you, man?
Finished my last Milton paper. Kind of just cruising to the end now.
Steve, Thomas has been in the void of space looking into the luxurious spaceship that is DePaul University. He's been remote. He's been away for a little bit. We haven't seen him much all semester. Man, it's great to talk to you full time. I hope that Thomas responds to you a little bit better than he responds to me, Landon, because I swear I can call him like five times a day and maybe hear back from him a week later.
I try to send texts and then I'll send like a question. And I'm like, oh man, he's responding. It's going great. And then I send another question and then gone. Like it'll be 2 days and he'd be like, yeah, sure. That'll be fine. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm glad we worked that out.
I'm working on it.
That's fine.
Well, guys, very excited to bring back What Our Parents Say. We had to take a little bit of a break, obviously, because we were prepping for finals, coming home. And, you know, Landon, one thing that I always have with you, it's intelligent conversation. So why don't we talk a little bit about knowledge? What did your parents talk to you about knowledge, the process of obtaining knowledge? You know, take it away.
So knowledge, it was always something that was emphasized with my family. So both my parents are very much like, hey, you have to be a smart individual. Pursue, ask questions, be curious. Always try to obtain knowledge. And the best thing you can do is try to learn from others. And so that's kind of where, like, foundation as a human. I vividly remember my dad being like, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? So that's my general understanding of knowledge. Thomas, what about you?
Yeah, I don't know if my parents ever made it explicit on, talking about learning and embracing knowledge, but it definitely was the expectation in our family. My dad's a high school English teacher. Both my parents are like the same super talkative personality. So they just banter like back and forth all the time with each other. So there was always like a lot of talk, like the dinner table, like we always talk and stuff. I think it was really, I was the oldest. So the expectation was a little heavier, but going through school, I also was doing really well. So I think combined with the fact that like they realized I was really succeeding in a like school format, they kind of just continue to push that. That's always just kind of in the base expectation in our family, I would assume.
For you guys, was it were grades and education pushed? Was that the way that you were supposed to obtain knowledge? Was it something like kind of venturing out and asking questions? Like what motivation did your parents do?
My mom always said that I was a straight A student. I was going to get straight A's. That's just kind of how it was. You are a straight A student. You don't bring home B's. Until the first time I brought home a B, and then, you know, I started bringing home more Bs. But no, for a very long time, it was, you are a smart kid and you're going to be smart, even if you're not smart. I didn't have a whole lot of common sense as a kid. So for that aspect of knowledge, like I wasn't that smart, like streetwise, but my mom made me read. I loved to, one thing that we always used to do is, every time I would go to the doctor's office and I wouldn't cry if I got a shot, we would go to Barnes & Noble and get a book. And that was kind of our thing. My mom loved to take me to Barnes & Noble and stuff. And for a while I liked to read. And then one day I didn't like to read and I was just going to be a sports and go outside kind of a person. And then, you know, after that, it was, I didn't really start to care about my education until I got to college.
Yeah, I kicked the shit out of a nurse when I was 8. So there were no books for me after that. I still, dude, I have to get my flu shot still, and I'm like dreading it. I was going to get it today, but then I was like, I don't want to get a needle in my arm today. Like, I'm going to wait till tomorrow. I'm almost 21. It's just like, I know, like, once I get the shot, I'm just like, whatever. But like, it's the worst. It's probably one of my greatest fears. I just hate them.
Is it the lead up to it, or is it like the actual getting stabbed?
No, it's entirely psychological. Like, I don't want to say I'm an anti-vaxxer. Like, I'm definitely a big fan of, you know, like other forms of medicine and health. But part of my aversion to vaccines in any form is just the fact that there's going to be a needle in my arm. So you won't ever see me with a tattoo or a piercing. So my parents never had to worry about that. That would have made them very upset, but I wasn't getting anywhere near the fuck of those things, like staying away.
So it's anti-vax in the sense that the psychological warfare, it's nothing to do with like the physical implications.
Yeah, no. I mean, our family didn't, I don't want to go down an anti-vax hole. Our family didn't get flu shots until like the last 2 years. Like we went to a chiropractor all the time growing up. And I'm really thankful for a lot of this. Like I've always ate like super healthy, like real whole foods. And my parents have always been like really into health. And I think now a lot of studies are coming out to like back a lot of the like trendy things we were doing. Like my parents are not hippies by any stretch of the imagination, but they definitely like, my dad was on a paleo diet for a while and stuff, but we didn't get flu shots for a long time. And now we're kind of stepping into that game. Damn. That just means more needles.
Well, I'm gonna go back to grades, because the first time that I remember being like really excited about something, like being excited about knowledge or learning about something, was the universe. I watched like Our Universe or The Big Universe or exploring that, and would watch it with my dad. And that was like the first books that I read were like on the planets and the stars and the solar system. And I read them. I was like in first or second grade, just destroying solar system books. And then after that, my dad was like, grades, you need to get good grades so you can go to a good college. And so the idea of knowledge was intertwined with like pursuing the things that I'm interested in and also working really hard in school. So that's the kind of foundation for knowledge and how I ended up here. Is that similar to any of your guys's experience?
I think it was for me. I mean, I didn't start with universe books. It definitely started with Lego Knight books. But I moved on, and I kind of like it really quickly got into like things like Greek mythology. My dad was obviously like an English teacher, but I also have like a crazy grandma. She's a hippie, but she like sent me books all the time. Like I read Percy Jackson in like second grade, like before it was cool. Stuff like that. And I just like most of my free time until I was maybe in like eighth grade freshman year was like spent reading. I was an okay athlete, but I think I also was very competitive and very externally driven, and I got the most positive feedback from teachers who were like, you're the good kid, you're the guy who gets straight A's. Like I slammed through grade school and for a little bit through high school, and that kind of was my that was really what I kind of was experiencing the world through. Like I got meaning from getting good grades, because like that's what you do, like you go through the school system and like you get good grades and teachers like it. And obviously when they go home and they grade my like homework, all they're thinking all day is like how great of a kid I am. And then it all changed like sophomore year when I realized like people don't give a shit about other people when the teachers aren't thinking about their one of 90 students when they go home. But for a while that kept me really, really chugging along.
I remember my dad like really pushing grades to the extent that like getting my dad's approval and getting my dad's praise, making my dad proud, was through school. Like he would say, like, if anything happens at all, you becoming a straight A student will make me the proudest. So yeah, I feel that sentiment, but for me, it was like my parent.
Yeah.
Jack, what about you? You said earlier.
Here's the deal. I was smart enough to like pass through with good enough grades. Like I would have like high B's and low A's, and I would do just enough to get that. Even in like the really hard classes, I was just, for some reason, I could do it. I have no idea why, but my parents hated that approach. They hated the approach that I could just kind of slide by doing the bare minimum. Like I said, when I got to college, that's when I really began to care about what I was learning about and start to really care about my education and all that. And you know, learning really wasn't the number one thing in my mind growing up. I think growing up, I just kind of wanted to do whatever I wanted to do, and I was trying to figure out ways to do it. And I think I was jealous of my sister the most, because my sister was the smart kid. My sister was like you guys. My sister was the one that, you know, only had one B to show for in 12 years of an education. And it was like seventh grade algebra or whatever, right? Something that was something stupid hard for our minds at the time anyways. But she was that person, and I was really jealous of her. And you know, it's weird. I remember the first time I was able to beat her in a physical fight, and I was like really proud of myself.
Wait a minute. I was like, what was the context here?
Well, we were just wrestling, and I finally just beat her the first time. And as I grew older, it's like, that's not the way to beat her. The way to beat her is to be smarter than her. And that's how that's why I started like caring more and caring more. And then one day I was like, why do you need to be smarter than her or smarter than anybody else? Just care about your education. And now I'm on this different path of like, just try to be a sponge, try to absorb as much as possible.
I think for me, there's something interesting. In high school, I was very much the way that you are now in college. So in high school, I was like, work really hard. I like took Calc 1 and Calc 2 my junior and senior year. I was always on like the math track. I took all these college courses. And now that I'm in college, I'm like, well, I made it. Cool. I can just kind of get by now. So it's weird that we had it flipped. Like all of grade school, all of high school was me making sure that I did the best that I absolutely could in school, which was, for me, it was linked to making my dad proud. And then from there, it just went on to getting into the best college or getting a scholarship or whatever. So I was a workaholic. And now, especially with COVID, I've realized that knowledge is something that you do on a daily basis. And so I was doing on a daily basis and wanted to become smart and get a good like generalization for the universe, right? So wanted to be able to understand everything around me simply in my own head. So like, what's the best way to say it? I wanted to be able to recreate the world in my head simply because I knew it so well. But it was also a form of escape for me when I was a kid. So knowing something or reading like the Percy Jackson series, I read that too, and I loved it. All the Greek mythology. And once I got all my work done in school, I would just sit and read. So for me, it's like value as a person or value as who I am has always been linked to the knowledge and intelligence that I have.
How about you, Thomas?
I think there was a distinct period in my life where that was definitely the case. Like a lot of my self-worth came from my knowing that I was smart and knowing that I was smarter than other people. In terms of like, there was definitely like, when I look back at some of my grade school years, I was like, dude, like you were such like a narc, like a academic, like you were just so full of yourself and condescending about it. I was lucky, like my dad, he was an English teacher for most of the time I was in grade school, but the last couple years, he's always been much more interested in like teaching, like than in education than like just teaching English. So he's now like the academic help specialist at the school that he teaches at. And for the last like 10 years, he's been like teaching teachers. So how do we think? And like, he was on like the growth. I'm sure you've heard like growth versus like fixed mindset. That was like his big thing right when it came out, like in pedagogy and stuff. And so that was always emphasized. And I was always like, yeah, I'm just smarter than people. Like I have a growth mindset. I'm humble, like whatever. But I do think like I got really lucky in that aspect. Like I was more trying to impress my teachers than I was my dad, because my dad didn't really care. He just like, what he's very interested in making sure like people are learning, like how do we teach the most effectively? And in the last like 4 years, that influence has really been huge for me. Definitely going into college, like Lance said, I was still kind of motivated by trying to get into like, oh, I need to have like a top university, like a big name university. That's gotta be it. And then within 2 weeks of being at DePauw, a lot of that started to kind of shed. And I think that's just continued to happen. But yeah.
So let me ask you guys a question, and whoever wants to take it can go ahead. But which of the parents was more of the life lesson kind of parent instead of the book smart? Like my mom was all about like becoming book smart. She was the workaholic, like you guys were in college and all that. And my dad was more kind of the guy that wanted to teach me life lessons. My dad was the one that introduced me to a lot of experiences that weren't necessarily academic, if you will. So one of you guys can take off with it.
Well, for me, there wasn't really a difference. So both of my parents wanted to do both. So my mom's perspective was always, hey, if you're a B student and you're giving your 100% and you get Bs, I'll be proud of you. If you're a C student, try 100% and you get Cs, I'll be proud of you. Same thing with A's. But it also came with the sense of be a good person, and being a good person comes with being intelligent. Being intelligent in the sense of being respectful towards others' opinions, always wanting to learn from others. I was the kid that wanted to talk to the adults because I recognized that adults had all of the intelligence. So I was also the oldest, and I think that has something to do with it. But yeah, I wanted to be with the adults and I wanted to sit and talk to them and listen. But on my mom's side, it was like, no, you're still a kid, work your way up. And my dad like gave me the respect that an adult should have, in the sense of my dad was like my best friend until I was like 12. So in that sense, it was again, just learn things because you enjoy them, have deep conversations because that's what you should do. And that's how you should understand the universe around you or your environment. So I don't know, it wasn't separated. Both of my parents tried to do both.
Yeah, I definitely think both my parents had a similar mindset. I mean, they're both really into, like they were both pretty intelligent and pretty book smart, but they also recognized that like I was performing at my level. And then like when I had siblings, like it was similar. One of my brothers like has like learning disabilities. So I think then that's when my dad also started really getting into like, how do we most effectively like teach for content and for procedure and not just like cram, or like, I want to have a hard class. So like a lot of that happened together. But I don't think my parents were ever like one or the other. They kind of just, I mean, they'd get pissed if I like was not turning in homework or stuff. But yeah, I think it was definitely a good mix of both. I wasn't allowed to watch Arthur till I was like 12, but otherwise.
Yeah. So you said the difference between growth and fixed mindset. Can you go into that a little bit more?
Yeah, I forgot who came up with this term or whatever, but it's a really old concept. But a growth mindset is someone who it's having a mindset where you're taking on challenges with that kind of like curiosity and excitement, and kind of what you kind of both described of how you think of your education now, like taking in opportunities where you can, really owning it, internally driven. And a fixed mindset is like, this is hard, I can't do it. Or being externally driven, like I need an A, or like, oh, I gotta be like, I don't wanna learn anymore. I think there's a lot of merit to that. And since then, I think it's not like the whole story for sure when it comes to education, but Yeah, I think thinking in terms of like growth or fixed mindset's really important, especially in like grade school. And as a teacher, how do we design feedback and instruction to promote more growth mindset and less fixed mindset? And I think a lot of the ways that teaching's traditionally been done do a good job of both of those, but lean more towards fixed mindset, external incentives, and kind of just rote knowledge instead of like genuine curiosity.
I think there's also a difference between memorizing things and regurgitating information. That's one of my biggest critiques on like the education system is like, memorize all of this and then just regurgitate it for the test and then forget it and move on, compared to conceptualizing and understanding something in a way that you want to think about it. You want to create your own creative solutions. You want to think about it and think outside the box. That's what that reminded me of. Do you guys remember anything that, yeah, go Jack. Yeah,
so, you know, that moment when you're like sitting in like an English class and then you remember something, like you read something and then you can connect it to like something in your science class and you just felt like a genius for that brief little moment. That's exactly, I think that's what you're talking about. And like the fact that I can count on the number of times on my hand that actually happened in high school, in middle school and elementary school kind of speaks to the American educational system. Like there should be more conceptualization, as Landon said, and more wholesome learning. And, you know, it's not a one size fits all. And it has been for a while. And I this doesn't need to get political, but I'm just so glad that Betsy DeVos is no longer the Secretary of Education. I would drag her through the thickest and deepest of muds. And oh my God, I'm so happy she's out. But there is a lot of good and a lot of bad in the American educational system. And I mean, it's reflected in how we speak to each other and talk to each other today.
And I also think if we want to be successful, there's going to be a difference between memorizing information and critical thinking. Because, come on, we have computers now. We can find things that you would normally have to memorize at the tips of our fingers. And so in that sense, the way that who we are as humans and how we can actually be important in like the workforce or simply in our own societies is going to be based on how well can you think, how well can you bring out something more important from information instead of just memorizing information and having it there. Because I mean, a computer can beat you with that all the time. I mean, you can say, "Hey Siri," and she'll say things she'll regurgitate information much better than we can. So that critical thinking is probably going to be one of the most important skills we can have. You guys are both English majors. So does that reflect like with essay writing and critical thinking?
Thomas, I don't know if I can speak for you, but it's more the analysis. That's what I'm graded on typically. It's not what you pulled from the text. It's what I'm pulling from the text. Like, go ahead, Thomas.
Yeah, I think separate, like my identity is like an English major. Definitely we do a lot of critical thinking. But as a student and just like a person, I do think there is a lot of, I think nowadays, especially like memorization and like that kind of grind style of education does get kind of a bad rap, but I definitely think there's even in a growth mindset or in really good pedagogy, there's still like a lot of, merit to having a little bit of that. Cause I do think part of grade school and high school is just learning how to like get things done and like do a job. And there's some importance to being able to just like consume qualities of information. Like you can't really think critically if you don't have that like background knowledge already. And I think, yeah, we do have computers and things like that today that are helping us hack that a little bit. But I do think you know, especially like from my music side of things, I have to memorize a lot of stuff in order to make, in order to think critically and then apply it. Like it's not one or the other. And you can have a, like, growth mindset requires a lot of memorization too. It's just like, why are you doing it and how are you framing it? There's a difference between memorizing because you're a teacher and you want your bio class to be known as the hardest bio class at the school, and memorizing because like you want your students to know how mitochondria like does its thing. Like, and one of those is really cool and the other one's just ego driven. And it's like, which one do you want to be, like really learning or just like proving your worth through like memorized data?
And I think with the flux in information, and we have so much information now, something that's important, as you said, is being able to tell what's important. And I think that goes back to your point, Jack, is yeah, it's about what you're picking out, because you can throw a bunch of data at a problem and be like, yeah, it's fixed. Or you can go, okay, this is what's important. This is what needs to be highlighted, focus on it and be creative in that sense.
And a lot of the sports writing that I do, it's analyzing stats, it's analyzing patterns, it's analyzing, you know, where players are going to go on the ice and where they're taking their shots and how successful they're being. And, you know, and it's about coming up with solutions instead of just analyzing problems. And to your point, Landon, I think that that's what's going to be, that should be a hallmark of our generation, is being able to interpret all this data and interpret all of this information. And, but like Thomas said, there is a lot of benefit in having information on standby. So Thomas, you're a trombone player, right? I myself am a trombone player. What interested you about the trombone all the way back in sixth grade when we had to choose our instruments for band?
Well, I chose my instrument in fourth grade. I went to like a private grade school and high school, which also definitely we can talk about that. Like that has a really big impact on how you think about like school and stuff. But starting in fourth grade, I chose the saxophone first because it looked sick and because the girl I was interested in liked saxophone. And my dad played trombone in high school, a little bit in college, not like very amateur level. So I put it second just to like not make him sad that I was dishing the lame ass rusty trombone in the basement for the shiny new saxophone. But then Sister Gail,
lady killer, the lady killer.
Honestly, but Sister Gail, our band director in grade school, like came up to me in the hallway and she's like, "Thomas, your lips are the perfect size for trombone. I'm putting you as a trombone player." She didn't mess around. So I was like, "Yes, Sister Gail, sounds good." And I didn't really like love trombone. Like it was fun. I was pretty good at it. I practiced unlike most of my peers just because, like, I kind of did most days. But then eighth grade, I decided like, the summer before eighth grade, I was like, I'm going to practice 30 minutes a day, like do an experiment, because I was a nerd. But then I got good at playing. And then I was like, oh, shit, like I sound better. And like I wanted to keep playing. It's like, oh, I can play the Rocky theme song now. Like, oh, I can play Star Wars now. And the better I got, the more fun practicing was. And it was just like this like snowball down the hill that it just kept getting better and better. So that's how I got into trombone. I wanted to be a DJ for most of that early period. Trombone was on the back burner, but now I'm obviously sticking with trombone.
Nice. Now with music, I have a lot of, what's the right word? Worry that I won't be able to like apply the skills that I'm getting. And so for clarification, Thomas and I are both getting the same music degree with a second major. I'm doing math and English writing and English lit. What are you doing, Thomas?
Lit. Yeah.
Lit. English lit. Okay. And so I try to always find a reason why I'm continuing down this music path. So I want to hear your thoughts on it, Thomas. Why, how is liberal arts and also music education important when it comes to like knowledge and, I don't know, having skills in the workforce later?
Yeah. So I think Zoom University has really abstracted my idea of college in general, like a semester off. That and just being older and like understand the world a little more. I'm definitely a little more nihilistic about liberal arts when used as just like a blanket thing. Like, I think liberal arts are great, but I also think there's some merit to, like, part of me wishes I was just like an econ major, and not because I want to be a business like sellout, but because I think there's like a lot of really cool ways. Like, I think there's a lot of cool ways to apply. I'm kind of not sold anymore on the fact that like college is where you learn how to do X, like, unless you want to do like pre-med or like college is where you learn how to do X. If you have to do like doctor, lawyer, pre-med, like that's where you do need rote memorization the most. And it's part of just the nature of the thing. And so part of me is like, oh, I could do that. And then on the side, I could be doing all these other things. But initially I wanted to go to a school for music just cause like I said, with, academics, trombone started to be another thing where I was getting a lot of positive feedback from instructors, and it was something I was good at. It was like my thing. And I kind of gave up most of my other extracurriculars for that thing. And I was starting to get really good, and I was like, I want to go like big name music school. Maybe I want to go be in the orchestra or whatever. And I ended up getting into some pretty nice music schools, but none of them gave me a lot of money. And DePaul gave me a shit ton of money. And like, that was really it. And frankly, now it's like best case scenario. Like, I don't want to play professionally. But DePaul has been so, I've been able to do whatever I want with my degree. And Jim, my private teacher, has been great with that. But in doing so, I'm literally like something that does fulfill me. I don't love getting like super woo-woo, like music's like a part of me forever. And I like music is a universal language, because I don't think that's all entirely true. But I do think, you know, I've already put so much into it, and it's something that I enjoy. And it's like one of my, I have, as both of you know, like a shit ton of hobbies and have gone through lots of stages, and trombone's been the one that's like stuck the longest. But trombone's been kind of through it all, and it's now like my longest hobby. It's helping get me through college. It's only like from a utilitarian standpoint, it looks nice if I want to do teaching and stuff. Like, schools need extra music teachers, or just different things. And also, like, I know, Landon, you said you were worried about how you're going to use the skills, but I do think there's a lot of things that learning music has done that have helped me be like quicker in other ways, especially with jazz and like improv and thinking on the spot. So I don't know. It's kind of like, now I'm just like, I freaking locked out. Cause if I were at one of those other schools, I think I would have spent a longer amount of time in the, I need to be good at trombone because that's what I'm good at, and everyone else is better than me. I would have been in competitive mode and not in living in the moment and trying to learn mode, you know?
Yeah. One of the main reasons why I chose DePaul was off of that was the, it doesn't feel competitive. It feels like I'm actually going to grow as a person and work with other people. And that's one of the biggest aspects of music, is you do have to work together. Like, it's a huge team building thing. So with music and things like that, something I've noticed is skill-based knowledge and kind of conceptualized creative knowledge. So can you touch on that and kind of explore that a little bit?
Yeah, I think this kind of goes back a little bit to our memorization versus like critical thinking talk. Skills, I don't know how like meta you want to get in explaining things with stuff like this, but you definitely need a lot of skills, like to build skills in whatever craft or like track that you're studying, regardless of if it's like something physical, like playing an instrument, or like studying music. Like, you need to learn, we're studying like English even, like you need to learn like grammar skills, and you, those are your building blocks before you can kind of get creative. So I don't know. I think they're both important. I definitely have a lot of weird freaking skills, and sometimes I use them to be creative and sometimes they don't make it past the skill point.
I think the most valuable type of knowledge is learning how to learn. And I think that's what I try to draw like some inspiration and motivation from my music based is, yeah, I may not, for my job and my career, I'm not going to be playing Bach's whatever seventh sonata on marimba, but through doing that in college, I've learned how to teach myself something. And so it's kind of goes back to the saying of, if you give a man fish, he'll come back to you the next day. If you teach a man to fish, he'll do it by himself for the rest of his life. The knowledge of learning how to learn. Like I know how to learn a skill because of music. So if I want to pick up coding, or if I want to pick up website building, or if I want to pick up like a trade job, like my dad does, like carpentry, I can do it because I know what the process is like to learn a skill. And that's I think that is the supreme type of knowledge. So, yeah.
Yeah. Process-based learning is huge. And I think that's where most of education will be going as we, you know, hopefully like figure out how to make sure more people can have access to that. But like, I think it's really important. Like, this is what you do in grade school. Like when you're memorizing those vocab words and when you're like doing like arithmetic and stuff and all these like just blatant memorizations, like you're learning the process of like how to be a mathematician, like how to be a writer, like things like that. And that's really what's important, especially for grade school and high school, I think. And this is what my dad has been working a lot with his like team of people at school. But just trying, and especially with COVID too, like learning the processes to do these things. It's a lot more important to know how to like interpret and analyze a piece of literature and compare it to the discussions going around across the globe than it is to be able to like, I know everything about Victoria, like whatever, some Victorian era writer, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's really, that's huge. Yeah.
I think another idea I just thought of, I've been watching The Queen's Gambit on Netflix, and I'm a huge chess nerd. I mean, I think that was one of the first games I ever learned. My dad was teaching me chess at like 8 years old, and I loved it. But something that's interesting about that is studying different ways to do things and studying the process. So what do you mean by, I've never heard of the term processed learning or processed intelligence. I don't know what term you said. What is that?
Yeah. Process-based learning is just like designing classes, like planning your class schedule around emphasis on like the process of what you're doing. So that means like teaching skills, of course. But you know, intentional class design. So this all goes back to a lot of stuff. I also have some background working as like an educator with a summer program where I've taught like English and music and art and a couple other things for the last like 4 years, been doing that. And over the summer this year, we did more of like a professional development thing. So I kind of got to like read some of like the, like how to teach like meta pedagogy, like stuff that was going on. And for the most part, I thought a lot of it was like really good, but this is what stood out the most, like when you said that. And it's like from the start, when you're designing a class, and this is just from a teacher's point of view, when you're designing a class, like, is your goal, like in the past, a syllabus might've looked like teaching goals. It's like no long division, like no, like read this book, understand themes in this book. But now themes might be like, the teaching goals would maybe be something more like understand a, like, and have a coherent writing plan, or like know how to interpret nonfiction, or like this, and like much more broader themes. And then you start to design the course around that. That's it from a teaching standpoint. But I think on an individual level, like once you reach that level that Jack, you kind of, and Lana were talking about, like now you're in it just to be curious and to learn and to grow. Like once you start to say like, screw it, I'm not in it, my goal no longer is to get an A. Like your internal syllabus is no longer like, I set my goal to get an A, or I set my goal to be summa cum laude, or to be on the dean's list. Like, my goal is to like have a successful podcast, or like my goal is to learn about this, and my goal is to be more open with this. Then you really reframe like how you're learning things, because it's not just like, oh man, like I gotta do this to get an A, or do this to get I gotta memorize this scale because I gotta know my scales. It's like, I'm learning my scales so that I can do something else. Or like, now I'm going to practice my scales for 10 minutes way more intentionally, instead of like just like grinding for an hour, you know.
So it's kind of the idea of learning how to do something. So learning what the process is like, and how to repeat that process in like a different situation. So yeah, I like that. So instead of learning how to read a book, you learn how to understand what that book is saying. That's pretty cool. Yeah. What was I going to say? I think when it comes to the workforce, something that my mom pointed out, my mom recently just got her master's degree and is now a nurse practitioner. So she's basically learning how to become a doctor. And so she's learning from a doctor, learning how to treat patients and work with them. And something that she pointed out to me recently is that when you get up to the higher education, the higher level and the higher paying jobs, if you per se, it's more about being able to do a project, being able to work through something in the same way that we have our classes. We're learning what that process is like. We're learning like, okay, these are our goals. This is what we want to be able to do. You have to learn the process, get through it. It's going to be like 3 months. And then you kind of close things off. The project's done. There may be some loose ends, but then you move on to the next project, compared to the idea of, oh, I'm going to go to a 9-to-5 where I'm an electrician. And I do electrician things all the time. So it's more of a ever changing, ever evolving way that as an individual, instead of I have this skill set, this is the only skill set I'm ever going to do, and I'm just going to keep repeating that skill set. That's cool.
I do think this is one thing where I've changed my mind a little bit. Like, I do think in the future, talking about the job market, and like as computers get better and as robots get better and things like that, like, you know, in the past, I was always like, I'm a liberal arts guy. Like, I'm a critical thinker. Like, I'm going to be fine. Like, I can do these complex sets, and it's going to, but the more I think about it, like, some of those skill-based jobs are going to be just as, if not more important. Like, it's really hard. It's easier to motivate like basic, easier to like automate basic court ticket cases or things like write algorithms for that, like basic law things, or like even do robotic surgeries. They're more consistent, they're safer than it is for like, you can't have a robot that, or we're way farther off from having a robot that can like go into your home and do HVAC, or like you can automate a farm. But if something failed, like you still need skills to like grow crops and stuff. So like, I think there's like a lot of merit to both things, and it just kind of depends on how like intentional you're being about, which goes back to my thing, like I'm no longer sold on liberal arts are like these great meccas of knowledge. It's like, if you're intentional about knowledge one way or the other, like what type of school you go to shouldn't matter. Like, if like you need to know that's a tool and you're spending a shit ton of money, and please like don't get super in debt just to say like you went like there, versus like, oh, I got a STEM degree at a community college, but like I am just as curious and just as like, I learned these processes of learning, and frankly, I'm better. I can do it without a $70,000 external like engine to keep it going. I'm not bashing liberal arts colleges. I'm very happy where I am, but I do think you have to be intentional. Like, that's way more important than like how you get there.
And one of my biggest inspirations and like role models in high school was my calc teacher. And he would go on long rants, and sometimes I would love them, sometimes I'd absolutely hate them. But one of the many rants that he spent 20 minutes on in the middle of calc class was the difference between liberal arts and other types of colleges. And he would just completely rip liberal arts to shreds. He'd be like, it's completely useless. You need a good skill set. Go into the job market with a very finite amount of skills. One that, like, his brother learned how to code a very specific type of like data structure and systems. And he made a bunch of money off of that because he was one of the only people in the world, one of like three, that could code that specific learning program. So that's an amazing skill. It's very refined to a small amount of people, and he used it to his advantage. But if you have a skill that a lot of people have, then being able to apply it in a creative way is probably the best. I tried to apply to a internship recently, and they're like, yeah, you don't. Yeah, you're smart, and yeah, you've gone through these things, but you don't have the skills. Like, you don't have the knowledge or the skill set in this data analytics to actually get the internship. I was like, well, crap. Like, should have gone to Purdue, where I'm going to spend all 4 years just learning this specific major. So I'm not saying that there's one way. You definitely need a blend of the two. And I think it's going to be important for the next 20 years. I also heard a statistic that our generation is going to have multiple different jobs, and we're going to hop from career to career. You can't just go work at the factory, get a pension, and do that factory job for 40 years and then retire and be happy. Like, we're going to have to be extremely flexible. So,
a 21 cm of you.
Yeah. So I'm curious how that's going to affect us and where our jobs are going to be in our careers.
Yeah, actually for my HOSCO thesis next year, I'm hoping to write a kind of like a pop science, but like a pop science book in defense of generalists, like a book on like jack of all trades, like, and that's more a defense of, you know, generalizing in skills and knowledge. So like, I don't want to say I'm like bashing on liberal arts or anything, because I very much agree with that model. And like, if you know me, like, that's kind of like a defense of my existence as well. But I do think, like you said, like, it's not the only way for sure, but I think that especially in the future, knowing more things and knowing more skills and being open to more skills can only really help. And I think we're getting further and further away from the idea that like you need 10,000 hours to be like successful in something, or like you have to just grind. And like, no, like you can pick something up and get really freaking good, and you can do another thing and another, like there's no cap. That there is to a certain extent, and eventually you kind of have to figure that out. But like, I don't think there's, I think that myth has been steadily broken. Like, you look at people like Elon Musk, and Jeff Bezos and all these like billionaires who have their eggs in a whole bunch of different baskets, and they weren't exceptionally like smart, like, or like, well, a lot of them are incredibly smart, but they weren't exceptionally like, oh, I'm going to do this in high school, or like just straight A students. You know, they just did a lot of things and took risks.
I do think the one skill that they had was that they were able to focus on one thing. Like, they're going to be like, okay, I'm going to spend 45 minutes on just talking about this on SpaceX and Elon Musk's example. I watched an interview with a coworker of Elon, well, an employee of Elon Musk. And he was like, yeah, he would, if he scheduled a block of time, he would only talk about that thing for that entire amount of time. And then once he's outside of that time period, go to another. And so that time management, and I think the best, one of the most useful skills you can have is the ability to focus on one thing at a time, because we can't multitask. Like, it's physically impossible to multitask. You just jump back from thing to thing and destroy your time and wreck your brain. So I think that's important.
I read somewhere that the human brain can only make 2 to 3 decisions. right? It can only process 2 to 3 decisions. Think about how many times you go down the cereal aisle, how many options you have there. You have Honey Nut Cheerios, you have chocolate Honey Nut Cheerios, you have Fruit Loops chocolate chip Cheerio. Like it's all over the place. And I mean, it goes back to the conversation we were having about the overload of information. And I am curious, Landon, would you rather be really good at one thing or kind of good at a lot of things?
Something I vividly remember my dad saying is that the jack of all trades, master of none, is worse off than being the master of one thing. And I think I vividly remember silently disagreeing with him, because he'd be like, yeah, jack of all trades, master of none. And in my head, it was like, you only have a certain amount of area so you can like dig down. And so the deeper you dig, the more master you are, but that means the less amount of digging you can do around it. And so when he said that, I was like, it's super shallow, but really wide, or it can be super finite and fine-tuned. And mine, I was like, well, skip it. I'm just going to do where master of this and then go out like that. So it covers the same amount of area, but you can be a master of one thing and then kind of spread out from there. So I think I've always aspired to live in the middle ground between the two. Know a lot of things, but know them pretty well, but not be limited to just one avenue. I think that answers your question. Thomas, do you agree with that?
I don't think you have to be one or the other, like you said. I mean, if you look at most of my video game characters' histories, like when you pick your character and you build it, and you're like, you get like 10 tokens, so you can put like whatever in like speed and like agility. And you know, like I usually try to break the system and like spread it out as much as I could. So I think that reflects my personality. But I think it's a lie that, you know, you have to specialize in something to be successful, or like you have to be a like jack of all trades, that's going to be more successful. Because there's, I mean, I think it's also a lie that, you know, you have, obviously we have a finite amount of time, but I don't think that there's like an allotted space to like dig out for your talents. Like, I think you can get really good at a lot of different things if you're really intentional at them. And obviously it's not mean you can't do everything, you're going to die. But like how successful you're going to be is not determined by like how many things you want to get really good at. I mean, you don't get to like pretend you're like doing fine and learning a bunch of different things, but like slowly dying and like not being able to feed yourself. But I think that it's not, you don't have to be one or the other. Yeah, pretty much what you were saying.
I think the way that I kind of like played the system when I was in middle school and the beginning of high school, it's like, well, if I can only be the master of one thing, then the one thing I'm going to master is the ability to master things. And so I was like,
wish for more wishes.
It's like, I'm going to break the system, because I thought of the brain as a tool. And so I thought of, well, if you can fine tune your brain and you're always improving the way that you think, no matter what area that you go into, if you improve the area, the way that you think, you'll be more successful in all of the areas. I think that's where the foundation for how I pursue knowledge is if you learn how to learn, then you can learn anything. So yeah, that's my opinion. Do you guys have anything else?
No, I mean, that goes a little bit into like what different types of learning and like different types of knowledge. But like, it all kind of depends on what your goals are. Like if you want to make a lot of money, like you can figure out which one's going to be better for you. Like if you want to, maybe it's better for you to get really good at this one thing. And that's going to maybe be less risky, but get you there faster. But like, it just kind of depends on, I feel like, what your goals are for that. Yeah. Or you can just aimlessly learn a bunch of random hobbies and not make a decision. That works too.
Leave all of the doors open. Cool. Well, I think that's the end of it.
Well, thank you so much, Thomas, for coming on. It's a pleasure as always.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for inviting me.
No problem, man. I look forward to hanging out with both of you guys and having these discussions in person again.
Yeah, man.
Yes, absolutely.
Hoping that we all get brought back so that won't be a problem. But that's going to do it for this episode of What Our Parents Said. Once again, thank you so much, Thomas Kurt, our guest. Landon and I will be back on a consistent basis, so be on the lookout for more Woodsman content. Until next time, thank you so much, everybody, and have a wonderful, wonderful day.
See ya.